Good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of 3Tune Tuesday. I am, as always, your host, Bonaparte, and 3Tune Tuesday is my opportunity to whisk you away to a time when wind-up phonographs were the height of technology, and the art of recording music was still a wonder of acoustics. Today is Tuesday, October the 1st, and you have found your way to my digital abode, a quaint cottage nestled in the sprawling digital countryside, where everyone's welcome. Please, come on inside and make yourself comfortable. Envision yourself settling into a large, plush Victorian chair, the kind that envelops you in comfort, with an old-fashioned stand-up radio beside you. Close your eyes, and let me guide you on a journey through time to listen to the early days of a pioneering record label. Today we're exploring the vibrant world of Emerson Records in its formative years, from its founding in 1915 up to around 1923. We'll be spinning three recordings that showcase the label's eclectic output and its role in shaping the sound of the early 20th century. Our musical time machine will take us from the lively banjo-saxophone duets that captivated listeners in 1918 through the novelty bands that defined the sound of 1920, including some early jazz and a composition from the great Irving Berlin. Each of these recordings tells a story not just of the music, but of the rapid technological and cultural changes that were transforming America in the aftermath of the First World War. So as we settle into our journey through the annals of recorded history, let's turn our attention to a pivotal player in the early days of the American recording industry, which is Emerson Records. Emerson Records was founded in 1915 by Victor H. Emerson, and the label would go on to leave a mark on the soundscape of the early 20th century. Now, Victor Emerson himself was no newcomer to the world of recorded sound. Before striking out on his own, he had been a key figure at Columbia Records, where he served as their first recording engineer. His experience and innovative spirit would prove invaluable in the founding and success of his own label. What set Emerson Records apart in those early days was its embrace of technological innovation. Victor Emerson held several patents related to sound recording and reproduction, including one for a universal cut record that could be played on both vertical and lateral phonographs. This was no small feat in an era when competing playback technologies often meant limited audiences for recordings. Imagine, if you will, a video cassette recorder and player that could play both the standard VHS format as well as the Betamax format. That's how amazing Emerson's recordings were. To truly understand the significance of Emerson's Universal Cut, let's explore the difference between lateral and vertical cut records for just a moment. Lateral cut records, which became the eventual standard and which are still used in vinyl records today, had grooves that moved from side to side when traced by the stylus. This method was favored by Victor and Columbia and most of the other major labels of the day. Vertical, or hill and dale cut records, on the other hand, had grooves that moved up and down, a method that was championed by Edison on his Edison label. These two systems were incompatible and meant that consumers often had to choose between different catalogs of music in addition to a different phonograph based on the type of phonograph that they owned. Emerson's Universal Cut cleverly combined both methods, allowing their records to be played on a very wide variety of machines. But Emerson's contributions went beyond just the technical side. The label quickly gained a reputation for its diverse catalog as well, featuring popular dance tunes and jazz numbers, as well as classical pieces and even spoken word recordings. This eclectic approach allowed Emerson to capture a wide audience and adapt quickly to changing musical tastes. In the years following World War I, Emerson Records experienced some rapid growth. The label tapped into the nation's post-war exuberance and released a steady stream of upbeat, danceable tunes that captured the spirit of the Roaring Twenties. At the same time, they continued to push boundaries, both in terms of the artists they recorded and the genres they explored. So today we'll be exploring three recordings that exemplify the diversity and innovation of Emerson's early catalog. These selections, all recorded between 1918 and 1920, offer a window into a time of really what was great change, not just in the recording industry, but in American society as a whole. So our first song on our musical time machine today is from 1918 and is Down South by Van Epps and Boudini. This is an instrumental and it's quite lively. It's an instrumental duet and it captures the innovative spirit of Emerson Records quite neatly. Fred Van Epps, who was the banjoist on this recording, was something of a superstar in the early days of recorded music. By this time known as the Wizard of the Banjo, Van Epps had been recording since 1897, and that would have been on Cylinder Records at the time, and was famous for his incredibly fast and precise playing. His counterpart on this record, saxophonist Nathan Glance, who recorded under the name Boudini, was a versatile musician who would go on to lead his own orchestra in the 1920s. Today, the pairing of banjo and saxophone might seem unusual, but it was a combination that gained interesting popularity in the late 1910s and early 1920s. The banjo, with its bright percussive sound, was a holdover from the ragtime era and minstrel shows of the late 19th century. The saxophone, on the other hand, was a relative newcomer to popular music, bringing with it hints of the jazz age that was just around the corner. Down South sits at the crossroads of these two eras. You can hear echoes of ragtime in Van Epps's nimble banjo work, while Boudini's saxophone lines hint at the more free-flowing improvisation that would come to define jazz in the following decade. This recording also showcases Emerson's strategy of featuring versatile studio musicians. Both Van Epps and Boudini were prolific recording artists, able to adapt to a wide range of styles and genres. This flexibility was crucial in the fast-paced world of early record production, where labels like Emerson needed to respond quickly to changing musical trends. Thank you. Now let's take a moment to pause as we flip our metaphorical record to talk about this week's sponsor, which is Skeleton Brew Coffee. Skeleton Brew offers a coffee experience that is as rich in quality as it is in flavor. It's specialty grade coffee, meticulously sourced and expertly roasted. Skeleton Brew will not roast your coffee until it is ordered to ensure maximum freshness. And with a commitment to ethical sourcing, Skeleton Brew exclusively offers fair trade only coffee, supporting the livelihoods of farmers worldwide. The standard lineup features six distinct blends, ranging from light to dark roasts, which will cater to every coffee lover's personal preference. And in celebration of the upcoming holiday season, Skeleton Brew has introduced three limited edition blends. The Yule Blend offers a deep, robust flavor for those who prefer their coffee bold. The Nutcracker Yule Brew brings the comforting essence of pecan pie to your mug, while the Witching Hour Pumpkin Blend delivers a seasonal favorite with a unique twist. Skeleton Brew's commitment to quality extends beyond the cup. For every bag sold, they donate $1 to a selected nonprofit arts organization. Currently, and through the remainder of the year, these donations are not going to an arts organization, but are going to support the Internet Archive, contributing to the preservation of our collective digital heritage. For those seeking distinctive gifts this holiday season, Skeleton Brew offers a couple of options. For those of you who have customers and clients you'd like to say thank you to, they have a corporate gifting program, which provides an really unique and interesting way for you to express your appreciation to your clients and customers. And for a truly special present, they have their Yule package, which combines three seasonal coffee blends with the charming book, "'Twas the Night Before Yule." It's also worth noting that your support of Skeleton Brew directly contributes to the continuation of Three Tune Tuesday. And as a token of appreciation for all of you out there listening to this podcast, Skeleton Brew is offering a special discount. Use the coupon code TUNE10, that's TUNE10, at checkout for 10% off. Now, as we continue our journey through the early catalog of Emerson Records, we are now arriving at our second selection, Hiawatha's Melody of Love, performed by the Green Brothers Novelty Band from 1920. The Green Brothers, George Hamilton Green and Joseph Green, were xylophonists and percussionists who did make an impact on the music scene of the 1920s. Their novelty band, in quotes, was not a fixed group, but rather a flexible ensemble of top-tier musicians who came together for recordings and performances. This adaptability allowed them to stay at the forefront of musical trends and keep up to date with the musical changes of the day. Of course, the term novelty in this context doesn't mean gimmicky or frivolous. Rather, it referred to a style of music that was new, exciting, and often technically impressive. Novelty bands were all the rage in the early 1920s, blending elements of jazz, ragtime, and classical music to create a sound that was both familiar and fresh to listeners of the time. Hiawatha's Melody of Love is an interesting choice in and of itself. The song, with its Native American-inspired title, reflects a trend in American culture in the early 20th century. There was a fascination with romanticized and, sadly, often stereotypical depictions of Native American culture in music, literature, and film. While problematic by today's standards, songs like this were extremely popular and considered exotic and appealed to a wide audience at the time. Musically, this recording showcases the virtuosity of the Green Brothers and their ensemble. Listen for the xylophone work, hallmark of the Green Brothers' style. The interplay between the xylophone, brass, and woodwind instruments creates a lively sound that would have been very enjoyable by the dancers of the era and would have gotten them out on the dance floor. The recording also demonstrates Emerson Records' keen ear for growing and emerging musical trends. By featuring groups like the Green Brothers novelty band, Emerson was positioning itself at the cutting edge of popular music, not just following trends, but helping to set them. So let's drop the needle and transport ourselves back to 1920, imagining yourself, perhaps, in a 1920s dance hall. Let's take one more quick break before our third song to spend a moment talking about Blind Skeleton, the organization behind 3 Tune Tuesday. Blind Skeleton can be found at https://blindskeleton.1 and is dedicated to celebrating and preserving the vintage and antique media and entertainment of the early 20th century. Our focus at Blind Skeleton extends beyond the realm of 78 RPM records that we explore in this podcast. We have equal passion and fascination with black and white films, silent cinema, and early photography. For those of you who find yourselves listening to this podcast intrigued by the early music of Emerson Records, I encourage you to visit the website starting Wednesday, tomorrow, where we will have a companion blog article published that dives deeper into the historical context of Emerson Records. This article and others will often include additional research and insights that expand upon our podcast content. And October, of course, is Halloween month and a particularly exciting time for vintage entertainment enthusiasts. Every Friday this month, we're featuring reviews of classic horror films. These pieces offer a unique perspective on the evolution of the horror genre, exploring how filmmakers of the past used limited technology to create enduring scenes and scares. And for the photographers among you, we are continuing to expand our focus on the evolution of photography. The series is tracing the technological and artistic developments that shaped the photography field from the earliest daguerreotypes to the advent of color film. So give Bland Skeleton a visit at https://blandskeleton.one, hunt down the social media links there, and engage with us for day-to-day and week-long vintage entertainment. Now, with that said, we've arrived at our final selection for today. Beautiful Faces Need Beautiful Clothes, performed here in 1920 by the All-Star Trio, was written by the legendary Irving Berlin. We featured many of his songs on prior Three Tune Tuesdays, and he needs little introduction, but his significance cannot be overstated. By 1920, Berlin was already one of the most prominent songwriters in America, known for his ability to capture the spirit of the times in catchy, memorable tunes. This particular song showcases Berlin's wit and his keen observation of social trends. The All-Star Trio, who are our performers for this piece, were a group of top-tier musicians who frequently recorded together in various configurations. The core members were xylophonist George Hamilton Green, who we met previously with the Green Brothers Novelty Band, pianist Frank Banta, and Victor Arden on piano. The recordings were known for their tight arrangements and virtuosic performances. The song itself is a fascinating artifact of its time. The title and lyrics reflect the changing social norms and consumer culture of the post-World War I era. The war had brought about significant changes in women's roles in society, and the 1920s saw a boom in the fashion industry and advertising. The song, with its cheeky title, captures the intersection of beauty standards and consumerism that was becoming increasingly prominent. And musically, the recording sits at an interesting juncture as well. You can hear elements of the ragtime era in the sprightly rhythm and the prominence of the xylophone. Yet at the same time, there are hints of the jazz age to come in the more free-flowing melodic lines. The recording also highlights Emerson Records' ability to attract top talent and current hit songs. By featuring a Berlin composition performed by very well-known studio musicians, Emerson was positioning itself as a label that could compete with the bigger players in the industry. Thank you. And that brings us to the end of our musical journey through time today. We've explored the early days of Emerson Records from 1918 to 1920, a period of really rapid change, both in the recording industry and in American society at large. We began with Down South, continued on to Hiawatha's Melody of Love, and concluded with an Irving Berlin classic, Beautiful Faces Need Beautiful Clothes. These three recordings, diverse in style and content, offer a window into the vibrant and evolving world of early 20th century popular music. It stands as a testament to Emerson Records' innovative spirit at the time. So as we close today's episode, I invite you to continue exploring the fascinating world of vintage entertainment with us. Look for us at Blind Skeleton, at blindskeleton.one, and hunt us down on social media. There you'll receive updates and various other content, as well as discussions about vintage entertainment. Remember to tune in next week for another edition of Three Tune Tuesday, where we will continue our exploration of the golden age of recorded sound. Until then, as always, I am your host, Bonaparte, bidding you a good night from my digital cottage in the sprawling digital countryside. In the whirlwind of the modern world, there's always a place here by the fire where the music plays on, timeless and true.